Put it on over here.
Okay.
That's a technical problem with the way the bill came in.
Good afternoon. It's about 1:30. Senate Environment, Energy, Natural Resources Budget Division meeting, and we're going to start out with Senate File 1587, Senator Bach, Biomass Fuel Production Facility Grant Appropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill comes to us as a result of a study that we funded, I think, last year. Senator Vickerman's committee funded a $300,000, Senator Vickerman, or $350,000 study on the feasibility of a biomass plant in northeastern Minnesota on the Boys Fort Reservation. I think most of that reservation, Senator Sacksock, is probably in your district.
That's a portion.
Some of it is in mine. With me here, former Representative Bob Johnson, who represents them. They could speak. Here we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Johnson.
My name is Bob Johnson. I am representing Boys Fort Indian Reservation.
Good to see
you. I have just some brief comments. The Boys Fort Band of Chippewa recently completed a detailed feasibility study for biofuels renewable energy project on the Net Lake Reservation in northeastern Minnesota. That study was funded through an appropriation from the legislature in 2007. The main conclusions of the study are there is ample biomass available on a sustainable and renewable basis to support a project of up to 200 tons per day woody biomass feedstock. Two, the preferred technology for this project is fast pyrolysis, which will convert woody biomass into two main products, liquid bio-oil and liquid char. And three, both the bio-oil and char are suitable renewable energy products for industrial and commercial users, such as taconite plants, electrical power generation. Bio-oil may also be further refined into high-value fuels and chemicals. A 200-ton-per-day facility would produce approximately 8 million gallons of bio-oil and 12,000 tons of char per year. It would create over 100 short-term construction jobs and 35 long-term jobs, plus create additional markets and job opportunities for area loggers. Such a facility would cost approximately $29 million. At current crude oil prices, a 200-ton-per-day commercial facility is not economically feasible. It does become feasible as crude oil prices go above $100 per barrel. The U.S. Department of Energy projects that crude oil will once again exceed $100 per barrel by the year 2013. In the meantime, the study in Boys Fort Reservation is recommending the development of a pilot-scale demonstration facility capable of producing 10 tons of biomass per day. This demonstration facility would allow for process refinement and improvements, the development of markets, and establishment of biomass supply chain. The cost of this facility, including construction and operating, is approximately $7 million. Successful development of a demonstration facility would lend to development of a commercial-scale facility once crude oil prices increase to $100 per barrel or more. Boys Fort will seek federal funding to support this project and anticipate that 50% of the funding could come from federal sources with equal participation from the state as well as Boys Fort itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, if anybody has any questions about the feasibility study, Short Elliott Hendrickson did the work, and they have a representative here available to answer any questions the committee might have about the feasibility study.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Mr. Chair, I don't want to question. I want to make a statement. The reason we put this package, I put this package and helped put this package together, because I want the tribes to do more than gambling. I hate gambling. You got to do more to keep your tribes, your area going, and this was just one of several tools that we can do so. I'm glad it's taken off.
To Short Elliott, I'm sorry, I didn't get your name,
Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Broses.
Hi, Mark. As to the study, when you were talking about the fuel supply, was there some radius that was designated as being making this particular project viable?
Mr. Chairman, we worked with the University of Minnesota Natural Resources Research Institute to look at biomass supply within a 25, 50, and 100-mile radius. As well, we looked at the biomass that is considered to be in direct control or indirect control of the Net Lake Reservation, and looked at a range of we came up with three different ranges, 50 ton dry ton per day, 100 dry ton per day, or 200 dry ton per day, and those within that range is what is considered to be sustainable. A radius, generally the sweet spot radius for a biomass to energy or fuel production projects is about 35 miles. And we did find that we have sufficient resources within actually a 25-mile radius to support this project. And when we considered that, we also considered that there are rumors of a large briquette plant that might be built within a 100-mile radius, a pellet plant that may be built, and also cognizant of the Laurentian Energy Authority's need for biomass down in Virginia. So that's how we came up with our sustainable rate.
And Senator Bach, eventually 35 jobs, as we both know it, in Net Lake is could keep a lot of people going.
It's a big deal, Mr. Chairman, in a small rural community like Net Lake.
Good. Any other questions?
And let me just add, Mr. Chairman, on the reservation today, unemployment's about 25%.
Anybody else in the audience wish to speak on this particular project? If not, Senator Bach, you want to move that Senate File 1587?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 1587 be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee bill.
Any discussion on that?
Stimulus bill.
And this for the stimulus bill?
The stimulus
bill. Yeah, that'd be fine. Okay, good. Any other comments from the committee? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? On the table. Thank you very much,
Thank you,
Senator.
Mr. Chairman.
Next, they see Senator Dibble.
They usually have it out. Let's see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have Senate File 1624.
Very good. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Hennepin County provides quite a few waste management services, waste hauling and managing the waste, and of course, collects a variety of fees for those services. And a fund is established that's authorized by state statute, and the sources of those funds go into this fund, and the uses are specified fairly specifically and explicitly in statute. What this bill seeks to do is to allow for some flexibility for the use of those funds. Right now, the use of those funds are specified fairly specifically for one aspect of the environmental services that Hennepin County provides. Environmental Services is the department that provides all of these waste management services. And the rationale to make the use of these funds a bit more flexible is that environmental issues touch not just land, but air and water, and environmental services at Hennepin County provide an array of programs. And right now, those funds which can't be used for this purpose force Hennepin County to rely heavily on property taxes for these purposes. And so this is, and as we know, in this current budget environment and this economic environment, counties are stretched very, very thin. And so the rationale is, there's some resources here. Maybe we can use them for a broader array of the services that come from that particular department. And I can describe those. But we first have an amendment to somewhat narrow which funds we're talking about. The funds that go into this particular fund, the resources that go into this particular fund include, tipping fees and some of the you know, some of the waste management fees, but also some of the funds come from the proceeds that result from the garbage burner downtown Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Provide steam and also some of the recycled materials as well.
Excuse me, sir, Senator Dibbles. Senator Fredrickson, would you move the A1 amendment?
Chairman, I will.
We have the A1 amendment before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you.
Approve the A1 amendment.
Thank you. And so, you know, the kinds of things that if this were to pass, that Environmental Services could use these, you know, these funds that go into this larger fund for now beyond just waste management services are identifying their services around identifying, evaluating critical habitat, reviewing development plans for watersheds, wetland and stream monitoring, their responsibilities around the Wetland Conservation Act implementation, preserving wetlands, et cetera, technical assistance to landowners on some land practices that relate to erosion, sediment control, stormwater, inspecting pesticide and fertilizer applicators, et cetera. Mr. Chair, I have Rosemary Lavin, who is the Assistant Director for Environmental Services, who could also shed some light and share some information if you so desire.
Ms. Lavin, identify yourself and go ahead. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rosemary Lavin, and I'm the Assistant Director with Hennepin County Environmental Services. I think Senator Dibble did a really nice job of summarizing what we're looking to do here, and really it's just to gain some flexibility for our Solid and Hazardous Waste Fund, which primarily funds our solid waste activities at this point in time. We've got a very small percentage of our budget that goes toward these natural resource activities. They're related to the proper management of waste in the sense that we're looking at the natural environment. We're looking at water and land and looking at what pollutants or contaminants might be there. And some of our monitoring activities, our wetland and stream health monitoring activities, help us to identify those pollutants. Our assistance activities help to provide the best stormwater management system that we can in order to help filter those pollutants before they reach receiving waters. So I appreciate your consideration of the bill today.
Thank you.
Happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions from the committee of Ms. Lavin? Is there anybody else who wishes to give testimony on this particular bill? If not, Senator Dibble, Senator Fredrickson, will you help him out again?
Mr. Chairman, I will. I would move that Senate File 1624, as amended, be recommended,
be laid on the table.
Laid on the table for possible inclusion.
For possible inclusion.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
before you do that, Senator Dibble,
the omnibus bill.
In this sheet that you passed out here from Hennepin County.
They don't want to send it along.
I'm just curious.
Senator Vickman, could you speak?
You're downgrading pesticide or fertilizer. You're just checking to see that it's put on the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Dibble.
I'll have Ms. Lavin explain in more detail, but this is an existing program. It's not a new service. It's ongoing services.
Okay. Other questions? On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Do we have anybody?
Yes.
Is Scogan? We're gonna wait and get Senator Scogan because.
Trying to be here tomorrow.
That'd be great. Are you?
As long as we have.
It won't be very long. I mean, an hour and a half. Oh, right. Just get if he can't come over. I'm sorry, Gary.
That's fine.
Still trying to work out your problem.
Good.
Well, good. It'd be nice to have a hearing. We don't need to do anything with it.
Was asking about your bill.
Senator Scogan, you're up. Yes. Senate File
1865.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1865 is an energy grant to the City of Deer Creek. City of Deer Creek is a small community, a couple hundred people, low tax base, community center that has some regional significance.
for them. Everything from the American Legion, I believe, meets there. The Senior Citizen Center is located there. You know, every wedding dance in the Deer Creek area that's in town ends up there, and they just have a real problem keeping that structure in sound repair. And they looked at this opportunity with an energy grant to maybe get the place put back in shape, and talked to their maintenance gal this morning, and the last snowfall, even came in a couple of the windows over on the west side. So it's time, and they're running the furnace when they're using the facility, and they just need some help to bring it back up to usefulness.
Senator Scogin, what types of things are they going to do? I mean, new windows, or
that's the whole project is windows. They have upgraded the furnace, and I know that they have new restroom facilities in there already. They just didn't have the money to do the windows at this time.
Questions for Senator Scogin on Senate File 1865.
They didn't have anything for me.
Somebody wish to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 1865 be laid on the table for considered for possible inclusion in the stimulus bill.
Senator Frederickson moves that Senate File 1865 be passed and laid on the table for possible inclusion in the stimulus bill. Other discussion? Not. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you, Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr.
Wish mine were that easy.
Senator Kubley. No, we're good. Oh, I think Senator Frederickson makes good chair. I don't know where my guy is. Senator Kubley, Senate File 1410.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have the A3 amendment.
We're going to pass that out quickly.
Okay.
You want to explain it? Is it pretty complicated?
No, it's pretty simple, Mr. Chair. It does, it alters the new language in a couple of different places. On page 6, line 24 of the bill, it deletes the new language and reinstates the stricken language. And on page 6, lines 25 and 26, it says to reinstate the stricken language. We should add and strikes the new language there too. So I need an amendment to the amendment.
You're going to make this amendment, so you make the author's amendment.
Okay. And then on page 7, the 12th line, it asks that you delete the new language, but also on page 7, on lines 27 and 28, we need to reinstate the old language. So there are a couple of small amendments to the amendment that need to be made.
So you move, Senator Kubley moves the A3 amendment. Does everybody understand what this and how we change this amendment? We're all clear as...
Well, basically what it does, Mr. Chair and members, I think there are still quite a few rural landowners who would be responsible for noxious weeds who don't have access to the Internet, and they would not know, you know, when the law changed or when they had to take care of their noxious weeds for the year, that kind of thing. So I think it's still best to put it in the local newspapers, Mr. Chair.
Questions on the amendment?
Would you like me to restate the amendment to the amendment?
You think you can?
Yep.
That'd be great. Thank you, Senator.
Okay, real quickly, I guess, you know, line 1.3 on the amendment, page 6, lines 25 and 26, should state, reinstate the stricken language on line 25 and reinstate the stricken language on line 26 and 27.
There's no stricken language.
There's no stricken language
in 27.
Yeah, so we should have line 27 on there as well. So it'd be line 25, comma, line 26, and line 27.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'm not seeing any stricken language on line 6.27.
Maybe I don't have the right version of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Do you have the second engrossment, Senator Kubley?
Oh, sorry about that, Mr.
That's
Chair.
That's okay.
The amendment's probably fine as it is then.
Okay, good. All right. That's helpful. Let's go back to Senator Kubley moves the A3 amendment. Is there any questions or discussion? Not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendments. Passed, okay. And the bill's in shape, so go ahead and explain it then or have your testimony, Senator
Kubley.
Well,
I think, Mr. Chair and members, I think there's only one portion that this committee is interested in. It's found in sections 25 and 26, I think, and section 28. It talks about funding. There is no funding in this bill, but it does create an assistance fund that could receive funding at some time in the future. It does not have any funding there at the moment.
Okay. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead, Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kubley, the funding mechanisms that are talked about in the bill will actually be handled through the Department of Ag. So we'll talk about that when we get, again, in Senator Vickerman's committee. The reason why the bill is over here right now is because of the membership of the committee in the bill includes the Department of Natural Resources and the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And I have a preliminary fiscal note, but that just verifies that those two agencies said there would be no cost to them for participating in the committee. So that was the main reason why it was referred over here, just because of the membership of the committee included two agencies in this budget division.
Given that information, do we have any questions out of the committee?
So it's just section 27 then, Mr. Chair.
Right. On any part of the bill? Go ahead, Senator Ferrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kubley, something on page 9, the stricken language on 9.5 and 9.6, that could cause the expenditure of state funds with no control, if that's stricken, with no control at all from a state agency.
Where are you?
Mr. Chairman, page 9.
Senator Ferrickson.
Lines 5 and 6, that's stricken language. And Mr. Chairman, I'm thinking that to make sure that we have the money to pay for this activity, there should be some involvement by a state agency before that's...
You want to speak to that, then?
Mr. Chair, my name is Susan Shaw. I work for Soil and Water Conservation District, and I'm here representing the Noxious Weed Task Force that put some effort into this bill.
Welcome, Ms. Shaw. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was just, it was pointed out to me that I believe that language was reinstated on the House side.
So we don't care. So
Ms. Shaw, Senator Ferrickson, what do you think we ought to do then, or what are you contemplating?
Mr. Chairman, I don't propose to do anything because the House may or may not have done it, but I would move on page 9, lines 5 and 6 to reinstate the stricken language.
Motion by Senator Ferrickson to remove the put the stricken language back on lines 9.5, 9.6. Any discussion on that motion?
I'd support the motion, Mr. Chair.
Supported by Senator Kubley. Any other discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Stricken language is now back on. Other comments, questions on the bill? If not, Senator Kubley, a motion's in order. Did you want to put this on the... this goes to the Ag Committee. Go ahead, Senator Torres-Ray.
Mr. Chairman, I have a, what I think is a friendly amendment, if we're ready for to entertain that.
Go ahead, Senator. What do you think about it?
And I just don't find this language anyplace else. So, Senator Kubley, if you have any suggestions on how to do it better. But I think that the control that we define in page 2 really does not address any language related to the environment. And I would like to introduce a couple of words in lines 212. So it will read, the above-ground growth of noxious weeds by a lawful, comma, environmentally sound method. Because we don't have, Senator Kubley, any language in this bill that really refers to methods that are environmentally sound. So I'm offering that as a friendly amendment.
Well, Ms. Chairman and
Senator Kubley,
Senator Torres-Ray, you know, is environmentally sound defined anywhere in statute?
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been trying to figure that out with the staff as to what would be the most appropriate term in terms of how we refer to environmentally, we think is environmentally sound, you know, what we think are environmentally sound practices. And I would like to use that term. And, you know, I believe that is being used in other, but I think I was trying to ask the same question, Senator Kubley, what would be the best term that we can use that it is defined in legislation? I hope you understand what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying
Senator
to find
Torres-Ray,
a term.
We're going to try to find a definition of environmentally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, it's not a definition of environmentally sound, but we do have a definition in the pesticide law called unreasonable adverse effects on the environment. And that's already basically illegal right now to do that. But if you wanted to stress it here, you could say, you could add that language to it that does not cause unreasonable adverse effects on the environment as defined in Section 18B, if you wanted, 18B.01, if you wanted to do that.
Senator Torres-Ray?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that makes sense.
All right. Is Senator Kubley?
Well, that would be fine with me, Mr. Chair, but, you know, I guess I had planned on dealing primarily with the sections that we deal with in this committee, but I have no objection to that language.
All right, Senator Torres-Ray, is that the only change that
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that this would be the only one that I suggest that.
Mr. Knopf, would you read that to us one more time?
Yes,
so is the form of this is an amendment by Senator Torres-Ray.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and how it would read is on 2.12, after that, insert, does not cause unreasonable adverse effects on the environment as defined in Section 18B.01, Subdivision 31, and prevents the maturation and spread of noxious weed and propagation. So,
okay. Everybody comfortable with that? On the amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amended to the bill. Other discussion on the bill? If there isn't any, Senator Kubley, would you want to move the Senate File 1410 as amended? Okay.
We'll do a division.
Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that Senate File 1410 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture and Veterans Affairs.
So Senator Kubley moves the Senate File 1410 as amended, passed to full finance and then be referred to Agriculture and Veterans Affairs? Budget Division. All right. Any other discussion? Not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Bill is on its way to finance.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Senator Frederickson, would you take the gavel?
Sure.
The committee has before it now Senate File 121. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The Senate File 121 is a bill relating to school trust funds. Before I turn the presentation over to Marty Vadas from the DNR Division of Lands and Minerals, I have a couple of brief comments. As I said the last time I presented this bill, we're really working on with the school trust lands is about 2.5 million acres remaining of the 8 million or so original school trust land acres, and most of that, 90%, is up in north central and northeastern Minnesota. And this land, I think, is some of our best multi-use sustainable forest. It's good for industry, it's good for recreation, it's good for habitat, and of course, it's worth income to our schools. I think, as you all recognize, last year we had some legislation championed by Senator Ann Lynch that really changed the outlook of our school trust lands. No longer is the money that's earned in school trust in the school trust account to supplant general fund money. It goes on top of it, supplements that money. So this corpus and these lands become more valuable to education. And so anyway, I think it's always important to talk about that a little bit before we present any bill or any changes that we might have. But with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Vadas.
Mr. Vadas, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Marty Vadas, and I'm the director of the Lands and Minerals Division for DNR. And if it's all right, Mr. Chair, I'll just quickly walk through the provisions of this bill and stand for any questions.
Please do.
Section 1, Subdivision 5 of the bill sets up a utility license fee. There is a current fee that is collected on utility licenses that cross state land, and that's $500, and that goes into the general fund. And that would continue under the provisions of the bill here. Subdivision 6 sets up the fee amount. I'll mention that in a moment. But Subdivision D of this portion of the bill is a change to current practice, and it would direct all of the income from utility licenses that cross navigable waters, and that would go directly into the permanent school fund, where at the moment that income goes to the forestry suspense account. There are deductions for costs against that, and then the remainder goes to the school trust fund. So this would represent an increase in income to the school trust fund under subdivision D, with that money going directly to the fund. Item E on the list sets up that the application fee is appropriated to the commissioner of DNR to cover the costs of issuing and monitoring utility licenses. And so then in subdivision 6, then, the amount of that application, the supplemental application fee, is set. As I mentioned, currently it's $500 for both land and water crossings, and there would be an additional fee of $1,500 for public water crossings and a supplemental application fee of $4,500 for public land crossings. In addition to that, it would be allowed that there would be monitoring fees for looking at the actual construction. And you should know on some of the large utility lines and pipelines that are going in, like MinCan, there is a considerable amount of time that's spent by the department monitoring the installation of those utilities to ensure that natural resources are protected. Moving on then, in subdivision or section 3 of the bill, this is a change in how land exchanges would be taking place, and the change is dealing with riparian land, and there are two provisions on exchanging riparian land currently in state law. And one is if it's authorized by the legislature. The second is exchange has to represent public access to the waters generally in the same area. The additional provision that would be added is in Section 3, and that would be that Class A land could be exchanged for Class A land. And if you think of Class A land as land that's managed by DNR and it's only that land, this would enable then, for example, some school trust land that is riparian to be exchanged for non-riparian land, with the idea being that the exchange would result in the ability to collect additional income for the school trust land. So, for example, if you have a riparian parcel that has limited income possibilities for the school trust, and we're allowed to exchange that for, say, forest land that does have more potential to generate income, that's the idea behind the proposal in this provision. And I believe the change after that point in subdivision 4, there is a technical change that was suggested by the reviser. I don't know that that has any impact that I could point out.
I wrote that.
So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions for Mr. Vadas? I do not see any. Senator Saxog?
Well, with that, then, Chair, I would move that Senate File 121 be recommended to pass and sent to full finance.
Senator Saxog, should go to full finance, or should are you anticipated being in, rolled into the omnibus funding, omnibus budget bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, I thought that this is for, I don't know. I guess as long as the chairman of the committee is here, I might defer to her, see what she's thinking.
I know, I'm just saying.
Senator Anderson, do you have a...
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to catch up here. You guys have moved really fast while I've been gone, and I really appreciate that. Wow. This bill, I guess, maybe Mr. Mueller, what do you think? Does this affect our budget?
Madam Chair, at least the Section 2 of the bill was part of the governor's budget, and that affects the fees and the revenues that we're tracking along with the budget bill. Section 1, dealing with permanent school land, do have a part of a fiscal note on that. There's no cost to that. It just clarifies which account it's going into. There's no net cost of general fund or any other funds for that one. It's actually a question of where the revenue gets deposited. So there'll be actually a small increase to the permanent school fund from Section 1. And Section 3, the bill is not really a cost item, so...
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
I guess I would say if there's no strong reason for it to go on its own, it probably makes more sense to put it in the budget bill.
That's just fine.
To track it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I think that's just fine. So I'd move that it be passed, laid on the table for possible inclusion.
Senator Saxog moves that Senate File 121 be recommended for passage and laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill. Discussion? Hearing no discussion, proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is laid on the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you guys don't even need me, I can tell, which is fine. So I apologize for being late. I just wanted to make an
announcement. I don't know if you talked at the beginning about the stimulus bill at all, or Senator Saxhog. We have one more testifier.
Mr. Dibble. Yeah. We don't have. No, he's been here.
Okay. What? Sorry. I guess we're not done with the agenda then.
No, we're done.
Yes, we have the district energy stimulus proposal.
Okay. We have one item left on the agenda. It's the district energy stimulus proposal. Mr. Ken Smith.
And Mr. Chair, while he's coming up, maybe I'll just mention that we had hoped to have our Senate File 657, our stimulus funding bill, today in front of the division. And obviously, it's not because we weren't quite ready. The bill wasn't quite written yet. So we swapped out our agenda for next Tuesday and today. And so we will be bringing that bill for a vote next Tuesday in the regular committee time slot.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the tape and our records.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ken Smith with District Energy St. Paul, and I'm pleased to testify on behalf of them today. We don't have a bill before you, but at the request of Senator Anderson, we wanted to come before you and share some thoughts with you. For those who are not familiar with District Energy St. Paul, we are a small 501c3 nonprofit company here in St. Paul, and we serve the heating needs of over 80% of downtown St. Paul, including this great building that we're sitting in here today. And we have been able to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels by over 70% by using renewable energy in the form of wood residue from the Twin Cities metro area as our primary source of energy. In fact, you may have seen recently your great work last year. There was some monies put to the DNR. That a great public-private partnership that's been reported in local media about a success of a program what the DNR is involved with to remove invasive species, buckthorn, from local parks and recreation areas, turning it into fuel that we then use at our combined heat and power plant to generate renewable electricity and thermal energy to heat downtown St. Paul. In recent weeks, District Energy has been contacted by a variety of public entities interested in the extension of our renewable, affordable, and highly efficient heating and cooling services to a wide variety of public buildings. It has been estimated that extending service to these buildings would require investing approximately $8 million for infrastructure, with projects ranging from about $250,000 to about $1.5 million. Unfortunately, these requests come at a time when funds are limited, and like many businesses, the severity and the long-lasting effects of the banking and credit crisis and economic downturn has severely limited our small nonprofit companies' access to capital from the bond credit market. And it has impacted our ability to expand our system or extend our renewable energy service to additional customers. As a result, project funding is extremely limited, and we are unable to self-fund large projects at this time. As you have heard many times, one of the primary purposes of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 is to create jobs by shovel-ready infrastructure projects. I'm sure you've heard that many times. As we read it, the Act specifically provided funds to increase energy efficiency and conservation of public buildings, both to reduce consumption and emissions from fossil fuels, but also to be a catalyst to shift our economy from fossil fuels to renewable energy. Using stimulus funds to extend renewable district heating and cooling services to public buildings would achieve all of those goals. In fact, in the stimulus bill, Congress specifically funded Subtitle E of the Energy Independence and Security Act, which specifically identifies district heating and cooling projects. It states under Section 544, Use of Funds, and I quote, application and implementation of energy distribution technologies that significantly increase energy efficiency, including district heating and cooling systems, unquote. Given the provisions of the American Recovery Investment Act, Reinvestment Act of 2009, District Energy St. Paul respectfully requests that you consider using part of the federal stimulus funds Minnesota is receiving to fund extension of district heating and cooling service infrastructure to public buildings. Funding the extension of our service would immediately create jobs for design and construction work. We can order materials and begin construction this year. Using data from a September 2008 report for the Center of American Progress and the University of Massachusetts, it is estimated that funding all $8 million in projects would directly create up to 80 jobs. It would maintain economic growth. Ongoing use of locally available renewable energy sources helps keep taxpayer energy payments here at home, creating jobs and securing jobs rather than exporting those dollars outside of Minnesota. We put about $12 million into the local economy each year because we use renewable energy that otherwise would go outside of Minnesota. Advanced energy efficiency. Historical data indicates that buildings connected to district energy use approximately 20% less energy compared to buildings using traditional standalone fossil fuel heated systems. They would accelerate access to affordable renewable energy, reduce fossil fuel consumption and emissions, and improve our energy security. And while we currently use biomass as our primary source of energy, we are actively examining opportunities to integrate solar thermal farms, large solar thermal farms, into our hot water distribution system, which is one of the benefits of the system we have here in St. Paul, further reducing our dependence on fossil fuels. It is our company's goal, we have voted on this at the board, long-stated goal, to replace all fossil fuels with renewable energy sources. We know that you have more requests and demands than supply of stimulus funds, and we don't know all the solutions to the funding dilemmas. But one method for using stimulus dollars to fund such projects could be the combination of grants and low-interest revolving loan program. This would stretch the stimulus funds and create a long-term benefit as repayments are made to the revolving loan fund that then could be made available for additional energy efficiency and renewable energy projects for public buildings in the future. I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I thank you for your consideration of this request.
Mr. Smith, I have a couple questions. You're proposing to extend your central district heating to existing buildings or to new developments?
Mr. Chair, committee members, it's to existing buildings that are not on the system today.
And they are not on the system today?
They are not on the system today. Or they have heating but not cooling, for example. So it's a mixture.
So would they have the utility runs or the utility network to extend those, or would you need to be putting those network in to do that?
Mr. Chair, committee members, it depends upon the building. Each building is different systems. You would have to extend the infrastructure to the building. And with our system, really, you're looking at a heat exchanger and some pumps. And depending upon the system that's in the building, you'd have to do some conversion work, and it depends upon each building.
And, Mr. Smith, you're proposing to extend this only to public buildings, or would you also extend it to private buildings and charge them for the energy?
This is, Mr. Chair, this is extension to public buildings. And, yes, they would be customers that get charged for the energy service.
Okay. We have district heating in New Ulm, too, in the downtown district.
Yes.
But part of the problem the city of New Ulm has encountered is when new developments occur, they're generally outside the central district of New Ulm, and the distance from the central plant is so long or so far that it's not economically feasible to connect those new developments into the central heating.
Mr. Chair, I'm familiar with that system. You are correct. District systems do have some limitations on how far they can go, and depends upon the system. Technology we have here in St. Paul is hot water. It's based upon Swedish technology. We've been in business for 26 years. It's highly efficient, and so actually you can go miles and miles and miles and miles with our system. It is capital intensive, so that while you have the technology can take it that far, it would cost some dollars, so you need to look at how much load is going to be there, and then the cost of does it make work for the economics. It doesn't always work for us as well. If we have to extend a long distance, we look at the economics. Does it make sense for the customer? And in some cases, we have to say, no, we're not there yet today, but in the future, we hope to be.
Mr. Smith, you said that this system is 20-some years old?
26 years old, sir.
So is there an older system in place in St. Paul, too, or was there a central heating system back in the early history of New Ulm? Of St. Paul?
Mr. Chair, there was an old steam system that is no longer in service that I guess at about that time frame it went out of use back in the early 80s. This system was created as a result of the energy crisis in the late 1970s when there was a great public-private partnership, which has been truly remarkable and has resulted in which is often considered the best district heating system in North America.
Questions for Mr. Smith? I don't see any hands going up, Mr. Smith, so thank you very much for coming to the committee and sharing with us your idea. I appreciate it. There being no further business before the committee is adjourned.
All right. Thank you. you.
I can't remember.
Thanks, Dennis.
I can't remember when they formed that. Wasn't Latimer real involved in that? I think, well, he was mayor then. I'm pretty sure he was real involved in that.
Oh, yeah, 5:30,
I can't remember
right?
when they were going through that process and developing that.
Lunch.
A lot of interest and a lot of concern about Central